Next on BYUSN, let's talk a little football, shall we? The spring season winding down for BYU and the quarterback battle continues to heat up. When does BYU need to have their clear starter in position to have the most success this season? The first BYU men's basketball player has entered the transfer portal, but do we anticipate more to join him in that regard? We'll be joined by ESPN's Sean Farnham to look back on BYU's first Big 12 season and how the Cougars can get set to win in the tournament next year.
Did you read what the Jets owner said about Zach Wilson? We'll share our comments about Zach's future in New York. Plus, BYU sprinter and hurdler Riley Hunt has run into Studio B. Talk about why he's here at BYU and the start of the outdoor season. And those top five Tuesday moments are golden. Today, the top five plays from the alumni football game. That's one of them right there. And Steve Young on the other end of it. Fantastic.
We are packed to the brim in today's show. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Tuesday, March 26th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who has very carefully crafted how his voice sounds this morning after working through just a marathon of a baseball game last night at BYU, Dave McCann. How's your voice feeling?
Well, the voice is bouncing back. The Cougars will have to bounce back on Thursday when Kansas comes to town. It was a cold night. Shout out to the fans who showed up, BYU and Utah Valley. And it was an awful night of baseball. These two pitching staffs, they were in the deep freeze. They combined to walk 20. Nine kids went up to the plate and got hit by pitches. Nine. There were six wild pitches. You throw all that in there, and then there was a nine-run seventh inning, and BYU ended up on the short end of it all. And you just kind of scratch your head and go, spring is coming. It wasn't there last night. It's not here this morning, but let's hope for a better weekend ahead. But, you know, this is one of those days where you just turn the page from one sporting event. You just, that didn't go right. Just turn the page and move on.
Hey, we're glad that you were able to recover and massage the vocal cords, because we have a ton to talk about
yes,
today.
Yes, we do.
All rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
There's something riding on every rep. Mm. It is truly a refiner's fire for quarterbacks.
You can see the ability in both those guys, and the competition's been really nice for those guys to get after it.
The voices of Riley Nelson and Kalani Sitake speaking about the BYU quarterback battle and what it's like to compete in that right now. BYU football has officially opened their final week of spring practices as of yesterday, Dave. And at the alumni game, Kalani Sitake gave an update on what is happening between his two potential starting quarterbacks, Jake Retzlaff and Gary Bohannon. Listen to this.
Jake's got, he knows the offense way better than what Gary's done, and a lot more comfortable with the way that A-Rod calls it, and A-Rod's coached that position. So he's further ahead, but you can see the ability in both those guys, and the competition's been really nice for those guys to get after it.
Okay, it's clear the advantage for Jake Retzlaff is that he is the incumbent, Dave, when it comes to understanding the playbook. He's been around the program longer. He knows the nuances better. He started four games for BYU last year. Unfortunately for Jake, all tough losses.
Yeah.
And it's been a while for Gary Bohannon, but Bohannon brings in a totally different physical presence. Like, he is a specimen for sure and has an elite ability to run around and has worked in a similar style offense with Jeff Grimes, which is something that Aaron Roderick and Jeff Grimes at one point were working together. Yeah. Like, so there are advantages for both. I think the question today is, when in the world does BYU need to have whoever the starting quarterback is in place so that they can have the most success this season?
We've had the opportunity of talking to both these guys at length. And I talked to Jake after the game Friday night. Then I watched him visit with Max Hall, the winningest quarterback at BYU, and just soak it in. And earlier I had a chance to visit with Steve Young. The legends kind of sharing this and that to some of these young guys. They're both impressive. They're both very different. I'd like to think, with the transfer portal opening again on April 16th, in today's college world, when you have a quarterback duel, you can't announce before then. You can't afford to lose one of them. Mm. The notion used to be, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. And now in today's game, if you don't have two quarterbacks, you're in big trouble. And BYU saw that last year when Slovis got hurt against Texas and Jake comes in, his first Division I snap is against West Virginia on the road. And that's a tough row to hoe, and it was, as we saw. Now, he's more experienced because of that, but you've got to have somebody behind him or behind Bohannon with experience. So you got to keep both of them. So you hold your cards, I think. And then when you get to fall camp at the end of July, I don't think you waste time making that determination, because the schedule's tough, and you get the feeling that they got to go in there with a full 4 weeks of work going, this is our guy, here's our battle plan. I think that's to their advantage. But if you do it sooner, you just risk, in today's world, I remember Mark Wilson talking about the quarterbacks that were in camp when he was a freshman. And let's see, I think there was Gifford, there might have been Gary Scheide, there was Jim McMahon, and a couple others. He goes, you will never see that group of quarterbacks at a BYU practice again, because three of them wouldn't stay. But back then, they didn't have the option.
Different era.
So when
different
that,
world.
When that revolving door is sitting right there, you have to be careful when you decide, you're our guy, we're going with you, I need you to be the backup. And so I think later is better than sooner.
Yeah, I agree. I in fact, just name a starter by August 10th. I've even labeled a date, which is 3 weeks before BYU's first game.
Middle of camp.
Just give me a starter at least in the midway part of camp, because what I don't want to happen is you get to 1 week before the game and it's like, okay, well, now we're going to announce our starter. And it's like, okay, how long has that guy known? Did you tell him earlier, or did you just tell him and then you told the media? Just give somebody the cap and let them do their thing for at least a few weeks so they can build reps and be like, okay, I'm the guy for the first game. But to your point, I mean, how many seasons has BYU had in the last decade where they've had the same quarterback start every game all season? It's been twice. In fact, it's the last 11 years. Taysom Hill started every game in 2013, and Zach Wilson started every game in 2020 in that strange COVID scenario. Right. So I'm not even sure if that one actually, like, if Zach Wilson had played the actual schedule that BYU was lined up to play, would he have started every game? I don't know.
Interesting about that year is that Zach and Jaren Hall are battling, and they battle in camp to the final week before they announce Zach as the starter. But these are two NFL quarterbacks.
Yes.
And they're millionaires. So that was a little bit different when you let the battle go that late. Mm. But I agree with you. Earlier or midway seems to be about
halfway through camp. Just give him at least 2, maybe 3 weeks, whoever the guy is, the nod to be like, all right, I'm the guy and this is the number two. But both are probably going to start. Like, breaking news. Like, it's BYU's probably going to have to start multiple quarterbacks, because
everyone does.
9 out of the last 11 years, at least 2 quarterbacks have started multiple games for BYU in each season, which is just a wild stat.
And you look around, and it's not just BYU.
It's college
everybody.
Football.
And I don't know how many quarterbacks Ohio State played last year, but you got to have 2, and sometimes you need 3 to stay competitive. Look at Florida State. They ran out of quarterbacks. And it cost them dearly at the end.
Yeah, they didn't get into the college football playoff.
You know what? They needed one more. Just when you think, hey, I got 3, you need 4. You've got to have a stable. And the stable has to stay. And that's what's hard today.
Well, and let me come to the defense of Jake Retzlaff just a little bit here as I was preparing for this and looking at the teams that Jake faced last year. This is telling for sure in terms of the Big 12 standings. Jake Retzlaff started against 2nd place, 3rd place, 4th place, and tied for 5th place in his 4 Big 12 starts.
2 on the road.
And 2 of those on the road. Yeah. And I know, should have beaten Oklahoma in Provo. Probably should have beaten Oklahoma State in Stillwater. But can we all want to point to, if we just had a little bit better quarterback play. We're talking about a guy who's making his first Division I starts, and he has to start against 2, 3, 4, and tied for 5th in the Big 12 standings. He didn't get any bottom feeders at all. He didn't get Cincinnati. He didn't get Baylor. He didn't get Houston.
But he might get Southern Illinois, you know, on August 31st.
So,
and then Wyoming and SMU in there, where you might get those 3 to get you ready for Big 12 play. So he can reboot and still get those on the schedule. But you're right. Yeah. He went in cold turkey, and he has a chance to reboot and now go in with a little experience into those games where he can fine-tune. And that would work to his advantage.
Don't close the door on that guy because he faced a very difficult challenge late in the season. Interested to see what his progress will be. This is going to be a unique battle. Just give me somebody by mid-August. Whoever it is, give me that guy by mid-August.
The strength of Bohannon, from what we hear, he's faster than all the running backs. And he's 6'3", 235. So that mobility, I think, is very attractive to Aaron Roderick because it's a bailout guy. Play didn't work, make something work.
In fact,
I think he's got that.
That probably gives him, they probably lean. Like if it's we say 50-50, I think maybe with that ability,
probably. Maybe
it pushes it to like 51-49 in favor of a guy like Bohannon.
Coordinators like to have a bailout guy.
There you go.
You know, how many times has Mahomes bailed out Andy Reid? Probably a couple.
Often when he's at his best is when he's
out of the pocket.
Out of the pocket. Yep. Out of system. All right. On to topic two we go. Dave, start us off.
Well, I was surprised just before the ball game last night. I saw on social media Marcus Adams Jr. announcing he's in the transfer portal. He's the first BYU player to jump in this cycle. Were you surprised? And how much movement do you think's ahead? We're going to ask Sean Farnham that question as well.
Not shocked. Because of everything that Marcus has been dealing with off the court.
Yeah.
Southern California kid, went through just a tragic loss, losing his father way too early. His grandmother has also recently passed away. We would all love Marcus to be able to stay here and develop and grow at BYU, but sometimes when you are dealing with those type of family troubles and devastating scenarios, you just got to go home. And so I don't fault him at all. Like, again, yeah, selfishly, the fan thinks, man, I would love for that four-star outstanding player to stay here and develop and be a big part of what Mark Pope and BYU basketball has going here. And Marcus was a great teammate. Like, let me be very clear. Marcus, the guys love him. He was always up and ready and excited on the bench. And, like, he wasn't healthy for a lot of the season. So with health and family things happening and the tragic passing of multiple family members, he decided that he needs to get into the portal and probably is going to go back somewhere very, very close to home. So it's unfortunate that it worked out that way. But mostly I'm just concerned about Marcus. And I just hope that he finds a good fit that allows him to help his mom and do some things at home. And again, I'm speaking with very limited knowledge. Like I receive bits and pieces here and there. Yeah. I'm sure there's much more to the story, but it makes sense. I was not shocked. I wish that he could stay and be a part of BYU basketball, but that's not the reality. And frankly, I'm going to be a huge Marcus Adams Jr. fan wherever he ends up. You were a little surprised. Like, what was your reaction when you first saw that notification pop up?
You know, I was a little surprised. Take basketball out of the equation. We didn't see him play, but shoot a couple of baskets this year.
Against Bellarmine.
Against Bellarmine. So you take basketball away and knowing what we know a little bit about his life journey, I was excited that the BYU experience was going to prepare him to deal with that and move on in life. And I thought, hey, around those teammates in this program, at the school, around the people that support the school, in preparation for living a life after basketball, I thought, hey, that this is the perfect spot for him. And so that's what surprised me, because I thought, when are you going to go to another spot? And they're going to have a hoop that's 10 feet and all that stuff, and the game will be the same, and hopefully he's a superstar as he moves forward. But I was surprised and disappointed, because I thought this was a perfect scenario for his life. And we don't know what's going inside the kid, and you make the decisions with the information that you got that's the best at the time, and this is what he's decided is right for him, so support him all the way. But it wasn't a basketball thing for me. It was just like, oh, you know what? We've seen this BYU experience have such a great impact on lives. And we certainly saw it with so many people on the field at the alumni football game on Friday, that BYU was a special place beyond whether they scored a touchdown or got a dunk. And that's kind of what surprised me, because I thought, this was going to be a good spot for him. But there might be a better spot for him.
Yeah, and we collectively wish him the best. Yeah. Like, genuinely wish Marcus the best as he pushes forward through some challenging times, for sure.
He's got a golden smile.
Yes, he does. Yeah. We're all kind of holding our breath as to how much more movement there may be with the BYU roster. And I know that, I mean, we've all got our fingers crossed, because if the core comes back and they can build off of what they did in year one of the Big 12. Like, the core returning is
they should have a shot.
So key. So if Jackson Robinson goes to the NBA, awesome. He deserves it. But if the primary core remains and you get Dawson Baker back and Colin Chandler back, and you can limit it to, you know, just Marcus Adams Jr. I know that, like, chances are it's not going to be that. Like, right. it just, in the world we live in, there's probably going to be at least one or two more that hop in there, and we probably be really upset about one or two of them. It's like, oh, man, I didn't see that coming. But fingers crossed they can recruit everybody back, speaking of the staff, and we'll see what BYU can do next year.
There's 650 kids in the portal already in a week, and I'm sure there were many head coaches going, huh, I didn't see that happen. now I got to go find some more guys.
All right, back to football now for our question of the day. We are exactly 158 days away, 158, from BYU and their season opener against Southern Illinois. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. When does BYU need to lock in on who the starting quarterback will be to have the most success this season? At Y for Life on X answers, it's kind of moot. He says, one, BYU doesn't have a lock-type QB, and two, BYU will start more than one quarterback this year. Be it by performance or injury, it's bound to happen facing teams that BYU does. So in line with our thinking that both are probably going to start, but I still think there's power in knighting your starting quarterback and giving them a runway to lead into the season rather than waiting till the last possible minute. Or heaven forbid, Dave, getting to the point where you're playing Southern Illinois and you're like, both quarterbacks are going to play. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that. Maybe Y for Life is thinking, run the football and make it easier on whoever is the quarterback. And then there'll be interchangeable parts. But if you're getting more than you got last year on the ground, you can stay in games and one of these guys makes plays and you win just a little bit more. Had to win at least one more to go to a bowl game.
Hashtag BYUS on X, Facebook, and Instagram to join that conversation.
I saw the NFL today announce the preseason is going to kick off August 1st. That's not that far off.
Let's go.
It's just around the corner.
128 days.
Get the stadium of fire. It's football season. That's how we mark the passing of time. BYU baseball back in the Big 12 this weekend. Kansas is coming to town. This is a huge series. A good series for BYU here will plop them right in the middle of the conference race. Thursday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, Big 12 now on ESPN+, and BYU Radio.
After the break, for the final time this season, the great Sean Farnham, ESPN college basketball insider and analyst, joins us to recap BYU's first Big 12 season and tell us what he thinks BYU needs to do to win in March Madness next year. This is BYUSN.
This is BYU basketball. They sent a message to the Big 12, and I think they sent a message to every recruit. You want to come play a fun style of basketball? We're going to shoot threes. We're going to play fast. We're going to be aggressive, and we're going to play in front of a sold-out home crowd every single night and have one of the best environments in the Big 12.
We are live in Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton alongside the fabulous Dave McCann. Joining us now for his weekly segment during college basketball season here on BYUSN is Sean Farnham, the elite ESPN college basketball analyst. Sean, great to have you back on the program. I hope you're feeling good in March. What's on your mind as we begin this conversation today?
I'm home. Like, I'm home for the first time in 23 days. Like, I walked in, my wife said, who's this strange man in my house? And I was like, honey, it's me. She's like, who's honey? My kids were like, why is this guy offering to take me to school this morning? It was really, really strange. But I'm hoping after, you know, another couple hours, they might remember me now. But no, it's good to be back home. It's been a heck of a ride all the way through Champ Week to Selection Sunday, then to obviously the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And a lot of unique storylines. Is unfortunately, I thought it would be a lot of chalk getting into that second weekend. It certainly is. Had Kentucky beat Oakland and beat NC State, it would have been the lowest total overall seeds combined in the history of the tournament since it expanded to 64. That's how heavy we are on chalk heading into the second weekend of this thing.
Well, Cougar Nation still struggling with Duquesne and how that thing went down.
Aren't you happy, though, that I didn't bring that up, like, right away? Like, I didn't go there right away. I kind of let you lead me there, so, like, that wasn't, the, you know, one of the things that stood out most today, what was on my mind.
Well, we're there now. What happened?
Look, I said this. There's no chance they're going to win the game if they don't make more three-pointers than their opponent, and they barely did. I mean, Hall hit a three late, and that that gave him one extra three. And for BYU to be successful, as we've seen all season long, they have to be able to knock down shots. They did not. And, you know, for we talked about it last week going into the game. BYU was about 100 spots better in total rebounding percentage than Duquesne. Those numbers did not reflect that way during the course of the game. Duquesne was the more physical team, and obviously that physicality was disruptive to overall flow for BYU at the offensive end. I know a lot of BYU fans were saying talking about the officials, and that's fine. I get that. But they were not, they got beat to the punch, and BYU is a physical basketball team too. But they got beat to the punch, and literally the possession by possession, that battle, Duquesne was the team that brought a little bit more fight, and they won the game because of it, period. And, you know, if you can't do, and the NCAA tournament is often this, like if you can't do what you do really well, can you still win? You look at that Houston-Texas A&M game. That we saw over the weekend.
Wild.
That was a game in which Houston, who has largely been predicated upon, you know, forcing turnovers, second chance points, all of those things, their level of aggressiveness got worse and worse as the game went on because of how it was officiated. But they didn't allow that to stop them from winning the game. They didn't allow that for them to be like, hey, you know, our entire backcourt is fouled out of the game now in overtime. We got no chance. No, instead they were like, hey, we're still going to find a way to win this game. And they did. And that's the markings of a team that's a one seed. So, and look, we see these games all the time in the NCAA tournament. And you can go through a lot of these first round upsets and we can point out things that did not go well for the higher seeded team. I think that BYU falls in alignment with a lot of those other teams that lost in the opening round. I'm pretty sure if you told Auburn, like, hey, you know, you think you're losing to Yale, they'd be like, no, we just won the SEC tournament. What are you talking about? But yet they did. You go to Kentucky, obviously, you talk about Oakland, and they'd be like, no, we're going to win that game. And that was not the case. Grand Canyon versus St. Mary's, that was a game that also was just very physical, not pretty to watch by any stretch of the imagination, and Grand Canyon's able to outlast St. Mary's. And they almost did it again to Alabama, by the way, the next game. I mean, just there's a lot of effort out on the floor, just not a lot of achievement. And that's why that game became a little bit more interesting down the stretch as well.
Sean, I know you appreciate a good meal, and I have been comparing BYU season overall to a pretty good meal. Appetizers is the non-conference. It was awesome. The steak and sides and beverages were delicious. And then dessert.
Is this Big 12 Eats part two?
It might be, Sean. But frankly, dessert was awful. And for BYU, dessert, as in the postseason, has been awful for a while. So what do you feel is the key to helping BYU finish the meal off the right way and create a delicious dessert? Because it's been 12 years since BYU has won an NCAA tournament game in the first round. And they just kind of seem to hit a stop late in the season when it matters most. So how do you get over something like that?
More athleticism, more size, in particular, more depth of size in the post that can lead to more production. Having a larger variety in the way that you can score. I think all of those things kind of come to fruition in the NCAA tournament. The games in the NCAA tournament always start to become lower possession games organically. Because every possession matters a little bit more. Even if you're the fastest playing team in the country, you get slowed down against opponents. It's easier to slow you down than it is to speed you up. So if you're BYU and you need flow and you need to play fast and you need to play out in transition and you need to find threes, so you need to hit those shots, and that's how you primarily score, you need to develop other ways to do that. Hall is a very good point guard. Do I think you need another ball handler that can aggressively attack and finish around the paint? I do. You know, I don't think obviously you need wings that can shoot. You got plenty of those. You got those for days. Foose is a very productive player, but he is undersized. And, you know, that kind of showed up a little bit in that Duquesne game. He did not shoot with any kind of efficiency from the field in that contest. Ali Khalifa is a different kind of big that obviously stretches and goes to the outside. And, you know, you pass through all that's great. But you need guys that, you know, who's your rim protector? Who's the intimidator down on the block that's going to be blocking shots and protecting the basket if your guards get beat on the outside?
Great question.
And that's where I think if I was this staff right now, I would be searching the transfer portal for somebody that's a quality shot blocker, somebody that can try to dominate the game 5 feet and in. You know, I mean, you look at other teams that had success in the NCAA tournament, like a guy like Infaladante from Oregon, absolutely. You know, I know they lost in their second round game, but he was a monster around the basket. His efficiency, whether it was against Colorado in the Pac-12 championship, and just like he tried to hurt the rim every single time he caught the ball and he finished around the basket. And I think that that's a component that is necessary for this BYU team if you want to take that next step, because you also have to look at the fact that this conference isn't going anywhere. It's just getting better. You know, a lot of people right now are talking, well, the Big 12 only has two teams in the NCAA tournament field still. No, it doesn't. It has Arizona in there too. and they're a two seed. So technically speaking, you have a 1, a 2, and a 2 still in there for the Big 12. So hit the pause button on the demise of the Big 12 right now. It's a grind, and you need somebody that when your legs get tired as the season goes along, which I thought that as the season went along, we saw some inconsistencies in BYU's three-point shooting. I think a little bit of that came from fatigue on the style and how they played, and that's not – that's normal. You're going to have fatigue at the end of the season. But where you see fatigue most is often in your three-point shooting.
Sean Farnham, ESPN College basketball analyst with us on BYU Sports Nation. So right now as we visit, there are 650 college kids in the transfer portal in just the first week. Does that number surprise you? And as BYU goes shopping for a couple of the things that you just detailed, are they in that group? Are the answers in the transfer portal, or are they in recruiting high school kids?
They can be both. Let's start from the end and we'll work our way forward. I think it can be both. I think that the best staffs in the country are able to identify the right pieces that fit what their needs are. Sometimes you see schools just simply recruit based off of stars next to their names, things like that. Jack Golke, last time I checked, didn't have any stars next to his name when he was a Division II player at Hillsdale College. Ask Kentucky how they feel about Mr. Golke right now, and they'll tell you that they don't want to see that guy again. You know, so you can find guys that make plays at any level. You can find them Division II. You can find them in the high school ranks. You can find them from the transfer portal at other Division I schools. I think the opportunity that what BYU has to sell, like any school does, is visibility, success, obviously, with this year, and then the opportunity to make an impact on a team. I think that's there and that's present with this roster. And so I would anticipate that they will scour not just the freshman high school ranks, but they will also look very strongly into the transfer portal. As you look at all these jobs that are kind of opened up, Utah State, Washington, Stanford, like all of Stanford is in the portal currently. And there's a lot of really good players that played at Stanford that would fit very nicely in the mix. So I think that there's a lot of talent there. I think you just have to identify the right ones. I mean, you know, we will go back and look at the portal and go back a season ago and see the biggest names in the transfer portal. I'm not sure Cam Spencer was one of the names that we really rolled off the tongue. I'm pretty sure Dalton Connect wasn't a guy out of Northern Colorado that we were like, yep, these two guys are going to be two of the most impactful transfers in all of the country. Obviously, Cam Spencer at UConn, Dalton Connect just did a phenomenal job in the SEC this year at Tennessee, actually averaged more points than Zach Edey in conference play for the Tennessee Volunteers. So I think that it's about finding the right guy, and I think sometimes we get so excited based on the name and the school in which they came from. My full anticipation is this staff right now should be looking at size more than anything, and then a backup point guard or somebody that can maybe even challenge to be the lead guard of this team.
And Sean, I feel like I should remind all BYU fans that Ali Khalifa was a transfer portal addition and at times was just absolutely brilliant. I know he didn't play certainly up to his standard in the NCAA tournament game, and you know, throw in the fasting from Ramadan, whatever. But, like, he was awesome for BYU through the transfer portal. And Jackson Robinson is another guy that Mark Pope went and found and took a chance on in the transfer portal. And that has worked out. Speaking of Jackson, I mean, consensus average has him as a mid to late second round pick right now in the NBA draft. So, in your opinion, do you think he can improve his stock if he comes back and plays another year in the Big 12? Or is the iron hot right now and he needs to go?
I think that will be determined over the process. I think that it's very easy to look at the mock drafts right now and try to project out where people are going to go. But I think a lot of that's going to change this year based on how you go through your workouts. I was talking to an agent last night that feels like this draft is really not one of the strongest drafts that we've seen in recent years. And because of that, there could be a lot of mobility from a player that was right now seen as an early second round pick, maybe going all the way up into the late teens, early 20s of the first round, based on how they work out for teams and what particular needs there are for teams. I think Jackson Robinson has a lot of traits that NBA scouts will absolutely love, one being his ability to knock down shots, but I think even more so his ability and willingness to all year long be the best player on the team, but yet come off the bench. You know, like, I mean, there were games where he just like, oh, yeah, I'm coming off the bench. That's fine. Like usually you're the leading scorer. You want the ball in your hands and you want to get it going right away. And he didn't worry about that. He knew his time would come and he knew his opportunity would be there. And he stepped up for his team throughout the course of the year at a very high and elite level. And I think that's a personality makeup. That's a mindset makeup that when you go to the NBA, let's be honest, most guys that get drafted in the NBA are not stars in the NBA. They're not. What they are role players that have an opportunity to start to excel and exceed in their role, and they kind of fill in the gaps amongst the stars that are on the roster. And like, while a lot of people may think that that's, well, why are you saying that you're limiting so many players? Go back and look at the drafts. How many superstars, how many stars are there in every draft? It's very few and far between. So being a role player in the NBA, as I think Fran Fischel says, you know what a role player in the NBA means? You're a millionaire. So that's not a bad thing to be. And I think Jackson Robinson is going to fit in nicely at the next level. So in a roundabout answer, do I think he's ready now? I do. Do I think he should go now? That's dependent upon solely based on if a team's ready to commit to him. Mm. I think that if he's a non-first round pick, here is an opportunity to come back and make even a larger name for himself, especially with the way that Coach Pope coaches and how he's put him in a situation to be successful. You can trust that and know that you're going to be on the big stage and have a lot of bright lights around you.
All right, Sean, to close out, and before we allow you to go and experience home and enjoy home because you're finally there, I need to ask you about the idea, and this is based on something Jimmer Fredette has talked about. Jimmer
Fredette going to the Olympics, by the way. 3-on-3, right? USBA basketball. Let's go.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible stuff there. Jimmer Mania about to hit the world level. But Jimmer has referenced his first two trips with his BYU teams to the NCAA tournament, both losses, as needed learning experiences that kind of elevated BYU's game and his game and motivated them to then make a run where they got to the second round, and then his senior year they got to the Sweet 16. Do you buy into that a team like this from BYU this year, having gone through the bright lights of the NCAA tournament and a Big 12 season, this can somehow channel them to be better when it comes to next year and the tournament potential?
No, because the roster turnover will be so high.
Okay. You think there will be a big roster turnover? Okay.
I just think that you're going to have so many new parts and new players in different roles that it changes. I think college basketball is unique now and has even become a little bit more unique. But This is this year's story. I talked about this with UConn when I was on Scott Van Pelt over the weekend. UConn is not the reigning defending champions. This is not the same UConn team. They're missing three or four players that were very important to their success a season ago. This is a team that is trying to, right now, looks like a team that's trying to win a national championship, not defend one. And so the standards of the program increase, but the experiences don't necessarily add up the same way that it used to in college basketball when guys stayed and had a lot of time. You're adding a guy that was a top 100 recruit a couple years ago, comes into the program next year. You're looking to add hopefully some size in the transfer portal and whatnot. That changes the whole entire locker room dynamic. These are guys that you'll count on that haven't played in an NCAA tournament game with BYU, haven't played through the Big 12. All of that starts all over again. Mm. Like, I had somebody ask me yesterday, so what's your thoughts on the early take on the Big 10 next year? I got no idea. Like, what are you talking about? How could I have any clue what it's going to look like? Michigan just got a brand new coach. Ohio State just hired Diebler, who we thought was maybe going to be leaving and going to Pepperdine. Like, then he does well in the interim basis, and boom, now he takes that job. Rutgers has two of the top three players in the country coming in next year. Like, I got no idea what the Big Ten is going to look like. And by the way, I got no idea what the Big 12 is going to look like. I will tell you this, Kansas isn't even going to look close to what it looks like this year.
No.
I mean, Bill Self is going to be, there's going to be some changes on that roster. So as you look at this process, it's really difficult to project out what next year's rosters will look like as far as who you are going against and how they're playing. 1 year's success does not determine, or lack of success in the NCAA tournament, mean that you're automatically going to have success in the following tournament, because your matchup and everything, if, there's no guarantee, first of all, that you even get back there. And that is the carrot that right now, the most difficult part in college basketball is this journey is over. This book is closed. We have to write a new book next year. And those chapters begin actually right now. Like, if you're a player on BYU's roster, and I've been a first-round bump before, and we lost to Detroit Mercy my junior year.
Yeah.
I was in the gym on Monday. Like, we got, like, getting guys in there and saying, hey, we got to change this. We're not doing this again next year. And that pain of losing, to Jimmer's point, maybe this was what he was alluding to, but that pain of losing, it should be the motivation of getting in the gym and individually getting better during this spring period, collectively getting better, working on chemistry off the floor that can allow you to find success the following year.
And there is the hope that I was looking for, Sean. That is a beautiful way to end this conversation. You've made us all feel better once again. Congratulations on a successful March, and I hope you have a little time off to relax and just enjoy some games for once, man. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, no time off. I'll be back working on Thursday. So, but it's all good. Final Four next week in Phoenix. It's a great ride. It's two more weeks. But guys, I appreciate you guys having me on each and every week. Been a great pleasure joining you, talking about a very exciting and great basketball team. And I would tell all your fans, the disappointment of March, it's real. And I get it, and you should feel it, and you shouldn't run from it. But don't forget about the joys and the elation of the journey that this team took you on throughout the course of the year. If I would have told you before the start of the year, and I did in November, that they were going to win 11 games in conference play, they ended up actually winning 11 if you count the Big 12 tournament win over UCF. But if I would have told you they were going to finish the year ahead of Kansas inside the Big 12, every BYU fan's going, where do I sign up for that? If I told you you go into Allen Fieldhouse and you'd beat Kansas, every BYU fan would sign up for that. If I told you you were in a home uniform in the NCAA tournament, every single BYU fan would have signed up for that. So while the sting is real and it is not to be diminished, and the finish was not the way that everybody hoped for, do not forget about the journey, the ride that this group of individuals and how they represented BYU, how hard they competed for BYU, and the joy that they brought throughout the course of the year for all the fans should be celebrated towards those players. As I look at social media right now, it's a big concern of mine of how when you lose, how fan bases go after, oh, you didn't play well on this, and we need you to be better. And No, man. You don't understand what these kids go through and what they put themselves through to get in that moment. So I hope that all BYU fans that watch this pause just for a second and be like, you know what? He's right. That was a heck of a ride for us to go on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Farnham. Thanks, Sean. We appreciate the time, man.
Talk to you soon. Nice.
ESPN Sean Farnham on BYU Sports Nation.
He's good for college basketball.
Yes, he is.
And he's great for this show.
We love that he's a part of it, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, BYU softball's off to warmer climates, at least for a day, down in St. George, taking on Utah Tech. That's at 4 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN+. 6 o'clock Eastern, 4 Mountain on ESPN+.
Now, after the break, wait until you hear what the Jets owner, Woody Allen, said about Zach Wilson. Like, eye-popping stuff.
There might not be an escape from New York. Is that what you're saying?
Stay with us. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media for content throughout the day on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer. He is Dave. Let's roll out your headlines.
Is the world ready for Jimmer Mania?
Let's go.
Here it comes. We congratulate Jimmer, officially named to the USA 3-on-3 Men's National Basketball Squad for the 2024 Paris Olympics. The games begin Friday, July 26th.
BYU basketball freshman forward Marcus Adams Jr. enters the transfer portal as of yesterday. The former four-star recruit played in one game at BYU and now leaves Provo after quick stops at Kansas and Gonzaga as well. We wish Marcus the best wherever he lands.
Cold night for BYU baseball. The Cougars surrendered 9 runs in the 7th inning, lost an 11-6 lead, lose the game 15-11 in a shootout with Utah Valley. Kansas is in town on Thursday.
BYU softball on the road today at Utah Tech in St. George. The Cougars beat number 4 Oklahoma State on Friday night, but have lost 6 of the last 7 overall tonight's game, 6 Eastern on ESPN+.
Men's volleyball, third straight week, ranked number 7 in the ABCA rankings. Outside hitter Luke Benson, middle blocker Gavin Julian were named MPSF Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week. For their performances at Pepperdine, Benson 47 kills in 2 wins, Julian a career-high 11 blocks. In Saturday's victory, they were outstanding.
BYU men's golf currently in first place, 11 under par through the first 2 rounds of the Bridgestone Collegiate Invitational in Napa Valley, California. BYU's Cooper Jones leading the field at 8 under par, 3 strokes ahead of second place. Peter Kim, Zach Jones, and Max Brenchley all top 11 currently.
Women's golf tied for 9th after the first round of the Fresno Classic yesterday. Final round just getting underway. Imagine golf weather today.
Oh man, come on.
More power to them.
Those are today's headlines. Now we whip it. The Cougar Whip Round presented by Maersk, your e-commerce logistics shipping partner.
Yesterday, Jets owner Woody Johnson was asked about the possibility of trading quarterback Zach Wilson. Here is his response.
You know, Zach, you know, I feel badly about Zach in some ways because, you know, last year would have been a great, he would have been the first time he could just sit back and watch a master at work, right? Mm-hmm. And he's never had that. He's been in the fire from day one. And I think that's what he needs. He needs to be in a place where he can observe for a while. And he's got the skill. He can do everything. There's a reason we drafted him at number 2 overall. And I have confidence that he'll get there at some point.
Can that happen here? You have Tyrod, you have Aaron.
I think it's, it's possible. You know, if we don't trade him, we're going to keep him. So it's possible that he could do it here. It's probably better if he changes faces and gets to a new place and kind of, he can wipe the slate clean.
All right, well, he's on the hook. The Jets are for $5.5 million to Zach, whether they keep him or whether he trades. Someone's going to have to pay him that. But until the Jets get an offensive line, I don't think it matters who the quarterback is.
Clearly, Woody Johnson, and I call him Woody Allen going to break. Clearly, Woody Johnson wants to trade Zach Wilson, but are the Jets going to get what they want in return? I don't know. Dave, I agree. He needs to go someplace and learn and sit behind a guy. If they don't want it to be behind Aaron Rodgers in New York, fine. Ship him off, whatever. But they're not going to release him. I still have a pipe dream. He'll end up in a place like Atlanta behind Kirk Cousins or Kansas City behind Patrick Mahomes.
Keep your eye on the Chiefs.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting stuff for Zach. And it's only getting more interesting as we move along with that Jets organization. Up next, BYU sprinter and hurdler Riley Hunt is in Studio B. Why he transferred to BYU and how he got the nickname the Mormon Missile at his previous program.
This you have to be fast.
Yeah,
you have
clearly
to be fast.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by Maersk, your e-commerce logistics shipping partner.
BYU Sports Nation continues as we move over to the Cougar Council Room. Alongside Dave McCann, I'm Spencer Linton. We welcome in an outstanding BYU sprinter and hurdler. He is Riley Hunt. Riley, welcome to BYUSN.
Thank you for having me.
Were you the kid that won all the events at Field Day in elementary school?
Oh, of course.
You were that guy.
Yeah, PE was the Olympics to me.
The rest of us were sitting over there going, look at Riley. He's going to win everything else. And the girls are going to think he's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where it started?
Yep. That's where track and field, that's where it was birthed, PE class.
Let's go. Yeah. Okay, Riley, you're here for a reason because you're awesome. And you recently did something pretty extraordinary, specifically ran the 5th fastest time in program history in the 110-meter hurdles. I mean, you were flying. What was that race like for you? And I guess that accomplishment and a long list of accomplishments that you've had as a sprinter and a hurdler.
So it was great. For hurdles, one of the big first accomplishments is going under 14 seconds. Thankfully, went 13.94.
Let's go.
So always PRing in your first meet of the season always feels amazing.
Your first meet.
First meet of the year. First outdoor meet as a Cougar, going 5th all time. So you can never be mad at that. So
when the gun sounds, Riley, and you're running, are you thinking at all or is it all instinct for the next 13 seconds or so?
Oh, yeah. You have You have no sense of sound. I feel like I lose vision too. Like,
really?
It is all just hitting my steps, going over hurdles. It's weird. It's like the movies when everything slows down.
Yeah.
The sound drains out. Everything gets very narrow. That's exactly what it, and the 13 seconds feels like, I feel like 5 minutes.
Do you think in that zone that if you do stop and think, that's cost you time? Does it have to just be 100%, total?
100%.
Really?
Like, I've been running track, I think it's my 11th or 12th year now, total. And sometimes when I run against guys that are a lot newer, that can happen. Whereas, especially in the hurdles, you start to think a little too much, you start hitting one, stuff becomes a little lazy, and then the more experienced guys could catch up and take a win from you.
Interesting.
So. Well, you're clearly a veteran, and you mentioned, okay, first outdoor meet at BYU, you PR in that scenario, which is awesome, but you bring a wealth of experience, you transferred from Cal. So why BYU? Why leave Cal and pick BYU?
So first off, I graduated. I spent 4 years there, got my degree. So
outstanding, congratulations.
Thank you. And I still had 2 years to run with COVID and redshirt and everything, so said might as well go get a master's degree.
Might as well.
And I thought, since I have the 2 years, and I already talked to BYU out of high school, I had Coach Kyle's phone number, so wanted to get a change of scenery, new team, just new experiences. So I gave Coach Kyle a call, and he was very happy to reconnect after those 4 years, even though we stayed in touch. If we ever were at similar meets, we'd always pass by, say hi, catch up. But he was very quick to welcome me to the team, welcome me back, and very thankful.
Have you ever once considered returning kickoffs?
Dude, always. this is my first year that I have officially done track longer than football.
So yeah?
I still dream about it. Still dream about it a lot of times, so.
Well, we know a couple guys.
We may have to have a conversation with somebody.
We know a couple
Kelly
guys.
Papinga comes to mind, special teams, Kalani
Absolutely.
Satake.
Hey, I'll take it.
Hey, they could use speed, especially a guy that was, and I know you have ties to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and you're a member. Your friends at Cal called you the Mormon Missile. Like, when did that become a thing for you in Berkeley?
So, at Cal, my ward was only about 20 or 30 people, my young single adults ward. So just in the school itself, there was not many members of the church. And I think in sports, there was maybe me and one other in the entire Cal Athletics.
Wild.
And so, and I don't hide that I'm a member either, even at a school like that.
Right.
And so all my friends, you know, everyone just comes up with nicknames for each other, and that one just fit pretty well. So my whole 4 years there, that was the nickname. So, and they still call me it to this day if I ever see him at a meet or on Instagram. And it's good memories.
Yeah, you can't slow down when you're the missile.
Exactly.
Right? You have to keep going faster.
Yeah.
So some motivation there. How about the NFL and your TV debut? What happened with that?
Yeah, how did you end up in an NFL commercial?
I did not think this was going to get brought up today, but my senior year of high school, We were trying to raise money for a new locker room for our football team. And I just came off a really good track season, and my football coach comes up to me and goes, hey, we're going to be in a commercial and they need a hurdler. And you're pretty good at that. You want to do it? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Didn't think I was going to have to go through like 3 rounds of auditions. But next thing I know, I'm hurdling. I even got a line, which I thought was awesome.
What was the line?
It was, can I jump over anything else?
Nice. And then, still got the delivery on that. Good job.
And then next thing I know, I'm jumping over Earl Thomas. So
that is awesome.
Yeah. It was a great time.
Hey, it's great to have you here a part of the BYU Athletic Department. We wish you the best of luck at the Clyde Littlefield Texas Relays coming up in Austin, Texas this week, and we'll give you some BYU Sports Nation karma for that.
Thank you.
Jump over some things in Austin.
Yes, that's the plan.
Hey, we'll do it again soon. Keep it up, man.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, great to have you here.
Good to be here.
Up next, we wrap up today's show with a rise and shout out to the newest Olympian. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation, our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated. When does BYU need to name their starting quarterback? Griz Father on X's last week of fall ball, if needed to determine the true QB1. He wants to wait longer than I do.
Yeah.
Today's Rise and Shout Out, presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about Jimmer?
Yeah.
The Olympian. The world is going to get Jimmer Mania, whether they're ready for it or not. Here's the picture that Team USA put out today. That's big time.
Jimmer Mania hits a world level. Can't wait. Our thanks to today's guests, Sean Farnham and Riley Hunt.
Conversation continues all over social media.
For Dave, I am Spencer. We'll see you tomorrow for BYU Sports Station. Go Cougs.